Welcome to A Better Lifestyle. I am your host, Richard, and I will be with you throughout this journey. This show is here to empower individuals to do more in life professionally. You will find a variety of topics that will help you to be more productive and more successful. So join me and the professionals from different industries as we bring education and knowledge for more success.
Hi, everybody. My name is Richard L'Espérance, and I go by the name of My Man Richard. Today, we're going to talk about sales. So welcome to A Better Lifestyle. Today, I have Brian with me. Brian Charlo, right?
Yep.
Great. So Brian is in sales. He's been in sales for quite some time now. So he's got some insights and that he's going to share with us. So please, Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself, your experience in the sales world, and we'll get started.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate that introduction and being able to speak to some of your audience. I'm looking forward to it. And what you mentioned, I've been in sales now for over a decade. I got into it when I was starting out in school. When I was in university, I did a couple of commission only sales gigs to just make a few bucks during the summer, you know, pay for, you know, some summer travels and to put towards school the following year. And when I got out of school, I got a job in sales starting out. I had a little bit of experience, so I thought it might be a good transition to get started out of university, because the bills start to pile up pretty fast. And you know, I found a couple of good opportunities and went from there. And I'm still in sales to this day. I still go out every day, just like most of your listeners probably do. So it's not as if I've transitioned into anything else. I still do it. And one of the things that I've recently done is released a book called Pitching Sales, A Complete Guide to Becoming a Sales Professional. And the reason for that is this can be a very difficult profession to get into. You know, if you've been in it for a while now, you sometimes forget a little bit about how difficult it was when you first got going, whether a mentor helped you get through it, whether you just kind of grinded away to get to where you are now. But you can probably think of a couple of people that you started with that didn't make it through. And for one reason or the other, whether it be they weren't able to find that same mentor, they weren't able to get that boss or manager that kind of was in sync with them, and they struggled. And when you struggle in sales, it can be tough. And that's what that book is about, is to really help those people through that first 3 to 6 months and kind of give back a little bit, because a decade later, I still understand those struggles and see those people. And I just wanted to help in some way then and kind of go from there. Mm-hmm.
So what are some lessons you've learned throughout your decade, your 10 years in sales?
That can be a little bit of a loaded question. It feels like there's hundreds of them. But I think the biggest thing that I can look back on now, especially getting started, is when you start out, you're just overwhelmed with information. You have, you know, your onboarding trainers, you have the people sitting beside you in your office, you have friends and neighbors and whoever giving you some sort of advice getting into sales and how to overcome objections and how to do this and that. And what it eventually settles into is finding a sales process that you're comfortable with doing. And that's going to be slightly different than the person beside you. That's going to be slightly different than the person in a different industry. But really just find out what you're comfortable doing with and doing that on a consistent basis. And at the beginning, that's tough because you don't know what your sales process is, and it's trial and error, and it's taking advice and tweaking and doing that, but stay consistent. Doesn't matter what industry you're in, doesn't matter what you're selling or who you're selling to, there's going to be a consistent process that you find will work, and reminding yourself that that's a proven strategy that you've found success with, and to go back to that time and time again, and then just make small tweaks. But overall, you know, the biggest lesson learned is consistency in what you're doing on a daily basis, and you'll find that success.
So what would you say would be some great qualities of a salesperson?
Well, I think the beautiful thing about sales is anybody with any type of personality, A, B, whether they're shy, brash, confident, there is a spot in sales for any personality. And the biggest thing is to not try to change who you are. So start with yourself and your own personality as a base and build off that. So the qualities are endless that you can do, but the two things that I think will be present in any successful salesperson that you see 20, 30 years in the industry is, one, they keep their integrity. That is first and foremost. Do not let somebody tell you or kind of have a wandering eye for somebody. You're like, how is that person in sales? They're lying to the customer, or they're doing it. That's not how you find success. You need integrity in this industry to move forward. And then, as I said, the second thing that you want to do is just keep that consistency and confidence in what you're doing in that process. And those qualities will eventually, you know, lead you to success. And then you have that pathway of how you're doing things, and you'll find long-term success over short-term quick sales. And in and out, you want to find long-term success in this industry.
You were talking before about the objections in the sales games. You know, you have the objections, and then the follow-up, and then trying to close the client. Can you go, can you give us some tips on how to handle objections and how to do a good follow-up, and then the close? We'll start with the objections. How would someone give us some tips on how would someone handle objections?
Well, the thing about sales is, no matter how good you are or what you're selling or anything, you are going to face objections. So don't try to hide from them. That is the number one thing you need to keep in mind, especially if you are starting out. You could have the best product in the world. Somebody's going to have an objection for you, and that's a good thing. Objections means that the person is at least listening to you. It means that they're taking in what you're saying, and they've thought of something, you know, some sort of rebuttal for you to see if this is a product that is a right fit for them. So first and foremost, do not run from objections. Embrace them. Know that this is part of the process. The second thing I would say, especially for people new to the industry, is if you don't know the answer, don't pretend to know it. Do not try to answer a question or an objection that you are not sure of the answer to. You know, it's so simple to just say, hey, you know what? That's a great question, and I can get back to you on that. Let me find out. You know, that's a great question. And you can continue. You don't have to let that derail. Like, it's not as if all things have to stop at, hey, we don't know that. It's hey, park that information. I'm going to write it down or take note and get back to you, and continue on asking good qualified questions to see if this person is a good, you know, prospect for you. And the third thing, especially as you're getting into it more and more often, is you have to practice the objections you're going to face. You need to be having think tanks with the people and your colleagues, whether it be in a managerial meeting, whether it be with your team, whether you're out for lunch, whatever the case is. Discuss the objections that you've come across in the last day or last week, last month, whatever it is. Discuss how you handled it. You know, let them know, hey, maybe I got stumped on that. What would you guys say in this situation? You need to start bouncing ideas off of people. And that's where it kind of reverts back to that initial point I made, where there's a place in this sales world for every type of personality, because you might, you know, not be the personality that might challenge a prospect on an objection because it's just not typically what you do. But if you bounce that idea off of somebody that is, they might have great feedback on how to handle it. They might have an exact scenario that they've dealt with recently, because you're inevitably going to have similar objections with teammates. And that's why you have that, and you bounce ideas, and maybe it opens them up to something, and you can share something back with them because you've recently had that scenario. So that's from objection standpoint, you need to be getting creative with your teammates, your managers, your bosses, which means you have to discuss the scenarios that you've come across. You need to be thinking out loud for these, throw ideas out and receive them back, and vice versa. And that's how you're going to build a solid foundation of overcoming these objections, because then you're going to get used to hearing them. Over time, you're going to hear the same one over and over and over again. And having a great response to that helps keep that flow going in the conversation.
What about the follow-up?
Well, the follow-up, step one, if you told somebody, hey, that's a great question, I'll get back to you, make sure you get back to them with that information. And if you are doing a follow-up and you've already had a good initial conversation where you've asked some detailed questions, you can't walk away from an initial conversation not any closer, not being able to look into something that you're going to bring back to that customer in the follow-up. So whether it be an objection that you weren't quite sure of, whether it be information you've gathered from them that you've learned a little bit more about their company, you've learned a little bit more about their business or applications that they might be able to use your product in. And then now you can do some more digging in how more and more that your service or your product that you offer is going to help solve any pain points that they might have brought up with them. And the last thing, when it comes to a follow-up, when you speak to a customer and you have a good conversation with them and you've overcome some objections or you've gathered more information, make sure you leave that initial that initial conversation with a plan for a follow-up. Let them know, hey, you know what? Let me dig into this information. Let me get back to you next Monday. Let me get back to you tomorrow, an hour or two from now, whatever the case may be, because every sales cycle and process is going to be different. But make sure you are very firm in letting them know what your actions are going to be, what information you're going to bring them in that follow-up, and then proceed from there and stick to those timelines and make sure that there's no confusion on what the next step is from both parties.
Do you think there's a time limit for follow-up?
It depends on how the conversation went. That's something that you're going to kind of learn with experience is reading that individual, reading if they were pushing you out of the door, whether they were kind of trying to wrap it up early. But the main idea is strike while the iron is hot. If you did have a good conversation, you had a good follow-up, and you're building this threshold with this customer, and it's kind of bubbling up to you're going to get to a final decision. Because if you let that follow-up take too long, one, you could obviously lose interest, but that customer's mind is going to go somewhere else. They might start looking into, oh, you know what? That was interesting, and I could use this, and that is a pain point within my business. They might start looking up competitors. They might start looking up different prices. They might start digging in more and more. You want to just stay respectfully on top of them, have these detailed follow-ups, but keep it in a tight timeline. Again, what that is, it's gonna waver, and that's a conversation maybe you have with your manager if they've got more experience within the industry or with that customer or a similar client, something like that. But yeah, you want to keep it. It's hard to say. It's arbitrary, but like a week, a couple of days. Like if they're asking for prices and if you can deliver, and they're asking really detailed questions about your product, and you're getting close, you need to stay on top of it and get to work on it and get that information back to them as quick as possible.
So what about closing? What makes a good closer?
Well, that's another, there's so many types of closers, and there's so many types of methodology. And the most potent thing that I've seen is confidence in the close, whether it is right in front of them, like, and you're passing the, you know, you hear like passing the pen and make them say, you know, barrel through three objections and try to, yeah, so why don't we get this done? Like, there's so many ways you can do it. Find what's comfortable with your personality, But when you close, close with confidence. Know that you have answered all their questions. You've overcome all their objections. You've found a pain point that you are going to solve. You've found the price point that they are comfortable with. You don't want on the close it to be the first time they've known what the price is. You need to discuss that ahead of time so they're aware of it. You don't want to be, you know, they have their head pop off their shoulders when you show them the price because they just had no idea what to expect with those numbers. So if you can say to yourself, I've gone through the sales process, I've overcome all these things, I know this is a service that's going to help this, they're aware of the price point, they're good. Now you're walking in with a confidence that, that essentially, you're not saying it out loud, but you're like, we're done. Like, this is all the information we need. So you're either closing the deal or we're wasting each other's time. And if you can come in with that type of aura and confidence that you know this is the right fit for them and their trust and they're confident with you, they'll close that 95% of the time.
How does someone or a company, because I don't know if you could answer that in general, but get more leads for their business? Are there different ways now, or it's pretty much the
it
same?
It depends on the type of company you're working for. There are two types of companies. There's more, but in general, there's two types of companies that just kind of go with the cold call numbers approach. And kind of if you're starting out in sales, most companies are like that are hiring people without sales experience, where you're given a list and you just got to call them. You got to pick them up and you're dialing numbers all day, or you're getting dropped off in a neighborhood and you're knocking on doors, or, you know, a street with all these businesses on it and playing a numbers game. And there's types of companies that focus in kind of using that 80-20 rule, where 80% of your business is coming from 20% of your customers, where they have a really detailed mining approach on these companies. So it depends on which type you're in. If you're in a numbers one, to get more leads, you just have to dial the phone more often than the person beside you. If you have to find those leads yourself, you know, go on a registry, depending on the type of industry you're selling to, find them, call them, or knock on their door, or however the company approaches to doing this. You need to just learn to get over that fear of rejection if it's a numbers game, and knock on the first door with the same confidence and gusto that you knock on the 20th door, that you knock on the 40th door, or the 40th phone call, whichever the case may be. And you play the numbers game, and eventually you're going to come across it. It's a tough way to find more leads. Everybody kind of needs to cut their teeth a little bit in sales, even if they do it for a little bit, just to learn that, hey, being told no is not the end of the world. Being told no is part of the process, and you're going to get told no more than you get told yes. And much like objections, you can't avoid it. So just jump in and get used to it. But if you can graduate to, like I said, a company that really, they find good qualified customers that you kind of get in the door with, and then you use that in to learn more about the business, and you see them, maybe not daily, but you're seeing them weekly, you're staying in touch with them back and forth, and you learn more and more about that business, and you take more of that wallet share from that customer. So you take a customer and arbitrarily get $1,000 worth of business from them, and now your job is to create that relationship, learn more about the business, and get $10,000 worth of business from them in the next year or 2 years, whatever timeline you want to put on it. Hopefully they can grow. You want to grow with these customers. Maybe it's 15,000 the year after. So you take these qualified, really good customers that fit your niche product perfectly and grow them from within. So there's ways of doing that. That way you don't need to get as many leads. So as you've kind of cultivated that customer, it almost takes care of itself outside of just maintaining a good relationship, which allows you to go out and find another strategic customer and another one, and then just kind of cultivate all of them together and really grow your business from there.
When it comes to B2B and B2C, what are some of the differences or similarities in the sales approach?
Well, when it comes to B2B, everyone wants to pretend to be the decision maker or act as if they have more influence on it until the actual decision needs to be made. So when it comes to B2B, you're not always going to be able to go right to the decision maker. It could be a process and it could be repeating the same information over and over again. But the biggest thing with B2B is the sooner you can get to the actual decision maker with positive influence from the people that you've already spoken to. So not just immediately, you're like, oh, you're not the decision maker, I don't need to talk to you anymore. Because just because they're not, just because they can't make the deal, they can break a deal. Because they're the ones sitting in the boardroom still, maybe, or they're the ones that's still in the decision maker's ear. So by respectfully working your way and getting that information and really knowing who the decision maker is and gaining influence as you get there, that really helps your B2B. And then once you're there, really focus in and hone in on that relationship when you're looking from B2B. B2C, it depends on a setting, but typically B2C, you're always talking to the decision maker. So then you're more in accelerating the sales process because you are with that right person. And that just comes with asking good qualified questions. So whatever this product is, learning the objections that you're going to face when you, if you talk to a population, if you go to a mall and you present the same product, you're going to hear the same objection like 70% of the time. Like it's just the way that human nature is. These original objections are going to pop up all the time. So being good at overcoming that in a personal way, making sure you're not offending them. If you're, they bring something and you're like, no, that's not right. Like this is the answer. You have to be respectful, but you got to be getting closer and closer. You're kind of leading that customer on a path because you know it's the decision maker, leading them on the path to making that decision that they have. And that just comes with good qualified questions, seamlessly overcoming these objections, kind of asking these pain points, whatever it is you're selling to them. If they're experiencing that pain that you see in the wider community, and if they are, building on that and trying to squeeze that timeline and that sales process down. Whereas in B2B, it's not always that simple. So there are a few differences, but they both, you know, they're both kind of fun to work in depending on the industry. And as long as you know what you're working with and you know the people you're supposed to be talking to and knowing what objections they're probably going to come up with and doing that seamlessly, you're going to have success either way.
With the online dominating now, the online marketing, how could the sales professional be more successful or adapt? Well, I'm not saying adapt because probably by now everybody has adapted to the online world, but how could they be better at it?
Well, I have two schools of thought on this. And it depends on what you're selling. It depends on your industry. Are you marketing your products through social media? Are you selling your products through social media? Is this an entrepreneurial thing that you're doing where you're trying to reach out to the broader market with this? And yeah, you absolutely have to adapt. And it's a luxury because now you're able to reach millions and millions of people that you would not have been able to reach previously, especially when it comes to social media. So updating your skills and your marketing and your sales approaches, take classes on how to do this. Like the one thing that I see entrepreneurs do all the time is they try to learn it themselves. And they're like, maybe I'll save money. And I'm like, maybe they're starting a business online and they want to get into selling. And they try to learn everything themselves. And they take three times as long to learn it. And they're not nearly as good at it as it if they had just taken a class on it, a training on it, maybe outsource that information so that they can focus on something they're better at to help grow their business. It's okay to outsource your work. That's the biggest thing for people starting their own businesses. You don't have to do everything and stay up late nights fiddling with learning how to make a website when you have no idea how to do that, or fiddling with trying to run a social media page when you have no interest in that. Your job, like your forte is making that product, you know, selling it to that, not doing these outside factors. So if you decide to outsource those things or take a training course on it, so you're not trying to learn it from scratch, you're going to take so much off your plate and allow you to actually focus on what you're good at to sell in a digital world. What I would say, though, if you are working with a company and you are trying to navigate through online meetings in comparison to in-person meetings, I had actually a really good conversation with a colleague of mine about this. What we've lost by doing online and Teams meetings and Zoom meetings with prospects and potential customers is distractions. You might have their attention here, but they are now in an office environment where they might have other managers walking in and out of the room. Their phone might be going off. They might be having an executive assistant coming in and trying to get their attention because I got a phone call. All these distractions are taking away from what you need to properly pitch your product, which is undivided attention. So don't forget those basics. Don't try to, if possible, like, so you might be talking to someone across the country or in a different state or province, whatever the case may be, where you just, where Zoom is great because you can actually have that meeting with that person on camera. But if you're in the same city as that person, or if you're nearby, try to avoid, I don't want to say copping out, but try to avoid just settling for an online meeting when you can actually physically go there and sit in that boardroom and see that person physically, shake their hand, ensure that you have their undivided attention, and you're going to have a far more in-depth conversation with that person. You're going to get way better questions. You're going to get way better and real objections instead of fluff ones, because that person's paying attention to you. And when they're engaged with you, you're going to really find out if that customer is interested in this and where to go as the next step. So try to balance it. It's got amazing qualities if you can't be in front of that person, but don't settle for an online meeting when you can easily get in your car, get on transit, and go see that person physically, because it does wonders for that relationship and that opportunity.
Any new trends you see in the sales industry?
There's obviously using digital marketing, using ads on social media, whether it be Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, all these quick hitter ads, but that fully depends on your target market. Because if you're putting way too much time into a target market that you're not reaching, it's wasted money and it's wasted time. So don't just jump into the latest marketing fad if it doesn't apply to your clientele or your potential customers. So don't get sucked into it. It might be it. If it is, then like I said before, either outsource it or train and learn, hire somebody that is a professional at that particular type of engagement, and do go back to doing what you do best. Don't try to run the whole circus, right? Like, spread out the jobs and doing that, but also make sure that if you are going to put that time and effort, if you are going to hire or outsource that, you're actually targeting the people that you want to be targeting, and really try to quantify if the work you're putting in is the input is coming back, matches the output that you do.
Okay. One last question, concerning AI. Mm-hmm. Do you think, how do you see AI and the sales industry?
So I'm not going to pretend to be an expert, but I would say that to bury your head in the sand on this technology is not the right move. I think this is something, and I don't have a crystal ball, but I don't think it's going away. And I think that if you're not using it, or at least you're not learning how to use it properly within your business, you're probably missing out a little bit. You're probably, like, I've done it, I've used it, I've tried to work with it to just do templates for emails. You can ask it questions. You can, right now I'm working in the construction industry. I simply asked it, I can't remember the exact question, but it was about steel and steel fabrication. I literally asked it how someone does this application. And it spelled it out for me in 30 seconds. and quicker than that. It filled it out for me in like 5 seconds. I read through it and I was like, oh, that makes sense. So I could have searched online. I could have, but it was just a quick hitter of information. I was able to move on from it. I learned I can apply that to the customers I'm talking to now. As I said, if I want to get a template for an email that I'm going to be sending out to a large number of customers, whether it be, so you're having a sale, say there's new information that you want to get out to these customers, it'll write you up a template. That doesn't mean you just copy and paste it, but it means you just work with it, you know, configure it to something that works best for, it maybe sounds more like you, but it just gives you ideas. It gives, like, and it's only growing. So to just write it off, I think is a mistake. To fully embrace it and only use that and lose that personal connection is probably too far the other way. But there's definitely somewhere in the middle where you can use it, learn it, use it to your advantage, but don't let it take over the basic principles, especially in sales, of that human contact, that fit, like being present with that person, having those intimate conversations, learning about their businesses from them. Don't let it overshadow those important processes that are for a 100 years from now, that's still going to be key in sales, the same way, even with all the new technology that we have today, was present 100 years ago as well and still here today. So don't lose that sight, but don't bury your head in the sand.
Okay. I said it was last question, but this will be last question. In one minute, can you, with everything we've talked about, what will be your last words concerning the sales industry?
It might sound biased because I've been in it for a long time now, but I think it's, and I say it in my book too, I say outside of, you know, being a rock star, or professional athlete, or whatever some of these dream jobs are, I think it's the greatest profession to be in because you can create your own success. The harder and more work you put into sales, the greater the output will be. It won't always be consistent. Every effort you put into it will not, you know, come back with a guaranteed sale, a guaranteed bonus, a guaranteed commission. But over time, if you are consistent, work hard, put in extra effort, become a professional. Don't just look at it as a sales job. Become a sales professional. You will get back more than you could have ever imagined. And that means, like, the day you decide to, on your drive home, instead of listening to music, pop in an audio for a sales book. The day you're on transit, you pick up, instead of watching another episode on Netflix, you pick up a sales book and read another chapter, you will see success. It just have, if you stick with it, that's what I love about this industry, is you can pick up information and apply it the next day. And then you're rewarded for that work and input. So the industry, I love sales. I love getting back what I put into it, and then continue to put into it and grow and grow and grow. And you're never going to learn it all, but you can become real good at it and make, you know, good money, a good profession, provide for yourself, your family, and all these great things. But you've got to put the work in. You can't just go show up at the office and think you're just going to, a sale's going to land on your lap. You got to work for it.
Thank you for listening. If this is your first time listening to the podcast and you like it, please don't forget to subscribe at the end. Thank you and see you next time.